Backseat Box Office, episode number 78, for the weekend of March 16th through the 18th, 2012. Hey, this is Tony.
This is Andrew.
This is Jonathan.
We are the Backseat Producers. Welcome to Backseat Box Office.
And this week, we had to pull Jonathan away from a new game he's playing. I'm curious to learn more about it. Tell us what was so important it had you so enraptured as to want to stay away from us.
Well, I didn't really have to stay away because
it's called a transition, my man.
I know. I'm just saying.
All right.
I'm trying to explain.
All right.
You transition, now I'm expanding. That's how it works.
Can we put our right leg in, our right leg out, and our right leg in, and turn it all about next?
Can we explain the transition a little bit more?
Well, I've got this diagram. No, go
ahead. Here's the flow chart of something that's been happening in my job. I got a lot of flow charts.
What the hell is going on? Did I just have a stroke? Because like all of a sudden, I'm not sure what just happened.
Look, it starts with the transition. Then we explain the transition. Then Tony has an aneurysm.
Tony, can you smell toast?
No, but I hear a popping sound.
Oh, that's your ammo cooking off. Go check and see if your house is on fire.
Sorry.
All right.
So anyway, yeah. I picked up. I've been looking forward to this game. It's called Journey. It's for the PS3. It's on the PlayStation Network. It's a downloadable game. It's by, and I'll probably talk more about it on the way of the game this week. Well, next week. 111. but it's by That Game Company. They did Flow and Flower, which were kind of more artsy games, not so much games. Like Flower, you control a bunch of flower petals flying around, picking up more flower petals.
That sounds weird.
It's kind of weird, but I mean, it's like I would think of it more as interactive art than anything else.
Yeah, I can see maybe. Like, if you can control this with something like the Kinect, I can see Aaron, my 4-year-old daughter, enjoying something like that.
This one you control with the 6-axis. So, you know, the PlayStation controller, for whatever reason, they added motion. Yay, motion. That was dumb. But anyway, That Game Company has actually put the motion to good use. And so you tilt it and you go faster. Like, every single button on the thing just makes you go faster. And the only way you move is by tilting the controller. You tilt it right to go right, that kind of thing. Back and forward to go up and down. So it's kind of just like flying around. And there's a bit of an environmental type message, sort of. There's some other stuff going on. Like, there's some stuff under the layers. But at first look and at first play, it's like I'm flying around. But Journey is a little bit different in that... It's got the other thing about these games is they're just gorgeous. That game company just makes incredible looking games. But and so Journey is no different from that. You start out as this character in this robed character in the middle of a desert. You're just wandering around in the desert, and the desert is like incredible, and it's got like a mix of water physics and land physics. I don't know how to explain it, but you wander around, you find these abilities, you end up with you have one ability that's like this call magic thing that kind of emanates out from you in a sphere, and you've got you unlock the ability to like fly / jump based on you have a scarf behind you. That the longer your scarf is and the more charged up your scarf is, the longer you can fly, the higher you can jump. Which sounds weird, but it works out in the way that the game works. But the really incredible thing about it that like hooked me in, and had you know, you been on time tonight, Andrew, I actually probably would not have stopped playing the game.
Yeah.
There comes a point where you're just wandering around, and then all of a sudden there's another dude there. And it's actually another player. You never log into a server. You never select multiplayer. It's just there is another guy. They, you know, there's another character wandering around. You can wander around together. You can do your own thing. You know, like the first time I saw one of these guys, he was just like hitting random places and looking for random stuff. And I'm like, well, I don't really want to do that. I want to keep going through the level. And I just kind of left him behind and went. And you run into another dude. And I'm like, okay, well, there's another dude. That's fine. But what's interesting is that they actually weave that whole thing into the story. So you're playing along, and then there's this story going on, and then all of a sudden, like, you go from being shown, like, one representation of your character to two characters wandering around. It's like, oh, all of a sudden, this makes sense. I understand now why I'm randomly being assigned to different people, and it just, I don't know, it worked out really interestingly. Like,
so now all these people you run into, they're other players?
Mm-hmm.
Just out there playing at the same time you are?
Just out there, just doing their thing.
Huh.
Yeah, so, and there's no way to communicate with them. You don't have any idea who they are until the very end of the game. Like, when the game ends, the credits run, and then it's like, you journeyed with people you ran into on your journey, something like that.
Yeah.
And then it shows you their name, but there's no other way to, like, you have the little, like, magic explosion button, which kind of works as a communication tool. Like, if you're trying to keep track of the other person, they hit it, you can kind of see where they are. But you just, like, wander around, and then there they are. There's a person.
Can you patch together some sort of rudimentary Morse code with the explosion effect?
That would be really, really difficult, considering it works.
So. All right.
Plus, I don't know Morse code, so screw that.
Fair enough.
But yeah, it's in just like the way you end up playing together creates, I don't know, it's really interesting. I'm kind of rambly about it because I haven't had time to, you know, process what I've experienced.
Now, is this a PC game?
No, it's a PlayStation. PlayStation.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
PlayStation Network.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, I mean, not a killer app for the PS3, but man, if you've got one, like, buy it now and play it. It's $15 and it's only 2 hours, but like, man, I got as much interest and I was as into what was going on in that game as I've been in any movie that I've dropped $20 on. So, you know,
that's cool.
Well, I really want to find someone local who will loan me their PlayStation, mainly because I just want to play Heavy Rain on it. And then maybe I'll play Journey 2 real quick and then give them their PlayStation back.
Heavy Rain was my killer app for the PS3, so still haven't played it, but it was my killer app.
Because it looks great. I've, you know, people comment on it. I'd like to experience it, but I'm not willing to drop that much money for a PS3 just for one game.
Yeah, well, there are good games on the PS3. I mean, I've got major complaints about it. Any longtime listener to The Way of the Game has heard me complain over and over about the PS3 and Sony's idiocy. But like, some of the games that they have are really pretty damn impressive. Infamous is pretty good, and apparently the second one's even better. That game company's stuff is great. Heavy Rain, whatever Quantic Dream comes out with next is probably going to be a PS3 game, and so you know that they're going to be going into interesting territory even if their games aren't always 100% perfect. You know,
yeah.
The Team Ico, whenever. God hoping it comes out this year. Whenever Last Guardian comes out, that's going to be incredible. So there are good reasons to get a PS3.
I have a question. Kinda... Is there any way do you think that The Last Guardian is going to live up to your expectations for it? Because I know how high your expectations are.
Well, I don't know.
Because your expectations are really high. Well, based on the first two, which were, you know, I haven't played, but from all reports, were amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I have faith that they will come out with something that I'm not expecting. So my expectations are both really high and also not that very high, because I have no idea what they're doing with it. I know that what they've created looks incredible, but I have no idea what the, like, hardcore nitty-gritty details are. So it's not like something like Assassin's Creed Revelations where I'm like, I expect Brotherhood with a different story, and I didn't get that, and thus I'm disappointed. You know, that was a case where I knew too much and got too little. This one, I don't know hardly anything except for reputation, and, you know, I have faith that whatever they're doing is, you know, building towards something better, because just from the experience of Ico and Shadow of the Colossus, I just know that they are very particular about how they present it, and they think about things like, how can we make you think about something different through our game? And that's kind of what that game company does as well. It's like, how can we expand what it means to play a game and what you get out of playing a game? And that's what I want. I don't like the specifics. I'm not worried about. I want to see what new things they're going to like do. So
see that kind of dovetails into the little bit I've been able to play of Mass Effect 3. One thing that is very clear is the developers at no point have rested upon their laurels in the development of the game from 1 to 2 to 3. It is the gameplay has evolved.
Mm-hmm.
And there were things. It was funny because there was a point in Mass Effect 2 where I started getting new weapons and started getting to the point where it defaults to give you the best weapon, what it thinks is the best weapon. But you can actually go back and choose other weapons. At one point, I was sitting there thinking, man, it would be really nice to just have a shooting range, a place where I could go to just kind of test out the weapons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there is one in Mass Effect 3. like nice. You walk into one of the offices because stuff happens. I'm not going to do any spoilers, but stuff happens and you are given access to a shooting range. And it's like, here, you could just go shoot all of your weapons. And there's three different targets. One is a purely just a non-armor, non-shielded target. One is an armored target, and one is a shielded target. So you can see how your weapons will react to the different to different environments and to different enemies.
Defenses.
Yeah, there's just little things like that they just keep adding to the game, and it's nice. It's really nice to see that it's not just more of the same.
Well, you know,
which they could have easily done.
I'm only about an hour into ME3, but one thing that just struck me immediately is that, and I didn't really realize it until I started playing ME3, but Mass Effect 2 has this very strong orange, yellowish palette of colors they use.
Yes.
And the loading screens and the dialogue options, just all over the place. There's a lot of orangey yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing I noticed on Mass Effect 3 is, you know, they threw after the opening cinematic, you're talking to an NPC, and you know, your little options for your dialogue wheel pop up, and they're this beautiful, vibrant blue. Mm-hmm. And then so you pick your option, and it just lights up in this great red, and you know, of course, you know, there's this big blue sky out there, and just there's, at least in the first hour, there's all this blue and red, which I just found a really nice, pleasing change in the color palette.
Yeah, and then they shade between the blue and the red, because I really noticed the blues and the purples.
Yeah,
because it was, I can see that. Yeah, so I'm with you. I mean, they made a lot of really interesting choices to show you the differences from game to game. If you play Mass Effect 1 and play Mass Effect 3, they are different games.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a big jump from Mass Effect 1, Mass Effect 2, and the jump, if you went from 1 to 3, the jump would be astronomical.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Now Jonathan, The Last Guardian, that's a 2013 release, right?
Fuck you, Andrew.
is that a no?
That's my game of the year, bitch.
For which year?
That's like the joke that they announced today, I think, that Diablo 3 is being released on May 15th. And someone was quick to point out they didn't say 2012.
Well, and I hate to poke the bear, but I can't imagine that's going to get out this year.
Actually, we just talked. Spoiler for the episode that drops the same day as this episode. We talk about that on the way of the game. They abandon PvP in favor of getting the game out as soon as
possible. Ooh, well then, yeah. Okay. Yeah, if you're going to cut that part off not to worry about it, then okay.
Yeah, is this for Last Guardian?
Just patch it in later.
And that's doable then.
Yeah.
You know what? They're doing the same thing with Diablo 3.
Yeah, that was...
Is that what you were talking about, or I thought you were talking about this other one?
I thought you were talking about Lost Guardian.
No. Not Lost Guardian.
Oh, okay.
I don't think
I'm talking about The Last Guardian.
I thought we were talking about Diablo 3 still.
Sorry. My fault. I should have been more explicit.
All right. Since we're terrible at transitions, I've got two more pieces of business that are completely unrelated to anything we've done yet.
Yes.
Mostly. First, this episode will drop on Friday. On Saturday is my lovely bride's birthday.
Happy birthday.
So what I would like is, we have a lot of people that participate in the chat room. They participate in the comments. They participate leaving voicemails. A number of them are on Twitter. What I would like is if everyone listening has a few minutes on Saturday to just wish her a happy birthday. She is on Twitter, at Julie Mast. There's no funky spellings or anything like that. Just go out there and wish her happy birthday. She doesn't know this is coming. I think she'll get a kick out of it. So if you could do that, that would be awesome.
So it's not Julie with two G's and a Y then?
No. Okay. No. Right. We did have... we met somebody at one point. I can't remember now where. But we had to fill out an invoice. And she put her name, and she spelled J-U-L-I-E. And the gentleman who looked at it, he had an Eastern European accent, and he pronounced it July. I thought that was humorous. But other point of business, I just found out about this tonight, and in the time, because we were actually delayed in recording, so I actually started going through it. Stanford University is releasing a class for free online on game theory.
I saw that. Becca was tweeting about that earlier.
Yeah. That's how I saw it. I saw it, basically her Facebook post on it that was probably just copied over from her Twitter.
Probably.
Yeah, so I signed up for it. I did the introduction video lecture thing. I did the first full lecture. It actually is kind of cool. The videos are 10 to 15 minutes long. The intro lecture is very much that first day of class. Here's the syllabus. Here's how the grading's going to work, you know, all that. And then the first video lecture was about 15 minutes long. It was about predator-prey games, and they basically were using models of predators and prey in the wild and treating it as a game. And the scoring was based on calories spent versus calories consumed. And that was the scoring mechanic they used. Huh. And it's pretty interesting. Like at the end of the first lecture, there's an interactive quiz. It's just a one question thing, basically, to see if you were paying attention to the lecture. And but I don't know. I'm kind of digging it. I'm going to go through it. If anybody is interested, if they have the time, it runs now through May, the beginning of May. It looks like they're saying there's going to be one quiz a week. There's a final at the end. There's about 2 hours of video lectures throughout. You don't have to watch them live. They just post the videos and you can watch them at your leisure. I'm going to try it. If anybody else is interested and wants to do like an email study group or anything like that, let me know. I'm a nerd.
Do you have to like take it real time or?
It looks like you have to do it within the weeks that they release the content. But you don't have to do it. You don't have to sit down on a certain day and do the quiz or anything like that.
It sounds like you get like a floating week.
Yeah, you have a floating week. I think that it seems like because I wasn't paying a lot of attention to that part of it, but I think it said that you have like 4 days to do the final, but for the final only when you start the final, you have 4 hours. Four real-time hours to complete the final. So you do kind of want to block off time to do the final. Otherwise, things are kind of floating. They request that you don't share your problem sets. You work on them together. You study together. But don't trade answers and stuff like that. It's all done on the honor system. Don't post them online anywhere. But And it uses kind of intermediate mathematics up to basically the beginnings of calculus from the way it sounds. If you know what a matrix is, or at least remember that you learned them at some point, you can go. I mean, it's like, yes, at some point I remember doing matrices, and you can kind of go back and pick it up pretty quick. It's so far, it's not complicated at all. It's very simple.
Well, and in the long run, it's a free class that has no credit, no nothing. Right. So
yeah, the most you'll get out of this is if you score a 70% or above, you get a certificate of completion. Mm-hmm. If you score a 90 or above, you get a certificate of completion with distinction. But it counts for no credits. It's none of that. I'm doing it because I think it sounds cool, and you know, if it gives a little more, a little more competitive theory, I think that can only help, maybe help this podcast and how we do the scoring for the leaderboard.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. It may not. It may make me come up with even more complicated scoring systems for the leaderboard. You never know.
So I can continue to have no idea how any of this works.
That's my goal, is as soon as you figure out how it works, to change it again.
Well, now would be the time, because I did figure out that, unfortunately, Andrew won last week.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
And I got to tell you, it's not often. It happens every now and then. It's not often that you get a 25 and drop two spots on the overall leaderboard. So,
congratulations!
With a smile on my face, and it is the Ides of March, so with a dagger behind my back, I'd like to welcome back Tim and Rich to playing Backseat Box Office. I got a hug for you, buddy.
Yeah. Tim, who has not participated at all in this season of Backseat Box Office, rejoins us with a 25. Dick.
And Rich, who is also back to the first time this season,
no.
Came back.
No, he did participate earlier in the season. It's been a while, but he did participate earlier in the season.
I got you. Well, he came back with a 21 this week, which was good enough to put him ahead of me. So, hey, I have no energy to be vehement. So,
oh, hey, look who's in the chat room.
Is it Rich?
It's Tad and Tim.
I have to log on to the chat.
He's flexing and bowing.
Well, it's hard to be. You know, venomous toward Rich anyway, especially when we're about to destroy him from in Russia. So.
yeah, you guys are about to finish him off in Russia.
Well, so here you go. Round two Axis and Allies update. For I know you guys are on the edge of your seat, even waiting for us to get through all this game theory to get to the Axis and Allies update. I know that, and yeah, I appreciate your patience, but it has been a back and forth struggle. The Allies have been doing a fantastic job. Rich has somehow managed to hold on. Japan's taken over most of Asia. It's been fantastic, and I think we will probably take Rich out the next turn or two, but I'm still on the bell, the edge of my seat. It could easily go either way at the drop of a hat.
Oh, it's going to be close, but I think if we take Rich out, we have a chance.
Yeah,
if we don't take Rich out,
we've got problems.
Tad, in the chat room, I will avenge Rich.
So even the British are saying, yep, the Russians are done. but we'll avenge you.
And then Tim, it could go either way, just like you, Andrew.
Thanks, buddy.
Oh, such love. Such love from the chat room.
I'm logging in so I can participate. So go on with your... Actually, I guess I need to say how everything did, don't I? So here are my picks for last week, in which all seem to be how things worked out. At number one, Dr. Seuss's The Lorax held out at number one. It dropped 44.7% to $38.8 million. John Carter from Mars, which I'm hoping we're going to talk about here in just a little bit, debuted at number two with $30.1 million. At number three, we have Project X with $11.1 million. Act of Valor, number four, with $6.9 million. And Silent House at number five with $6.6 million. Those were my picks, but that was not the order they were in on the Friday estimates, was it, Jonathan?
No, unfortunately not.
It wasn't order on the Sunday estimates.
On the Sunday estimates, yeah. The Sunday.
Oh, that's right. Yes, yes.
The weekend estimates actually were laid out with the Lorax at number one, John Carter at number two, Project X at number three, Silent House at number four, and Act of Valor at number five, which were my picks. But unfortunately, Silent House and Act of Valor were only separated by $10,000. And that kind of money is chump change, so.
That's a rounding error.
Yeah, that really is. And the difference between them, even in the official counts, was kind of a rounding error. So I want a recount. I need to get Al Gore's lawyers. No, wait. George Bush's lawyers.
Between fourth and...
We need to put the jurisdiction officially in Florida, I think.
Between
how does this work? I need to win somehow by unofficial recount.
Between fourth and sixth place was less than, and it was just a little more than 800,000 difference between fourth and sixth place. So it was close. And I got to be honest, I was kind of surprised to see 1,000 words get as high as sixth place. Am I alone in that?
I don't remember what 1,000 words.
That's the Eddie Murphy movie. The Eddie Murphy movie.
Oh, right. The one that was actually filmed like 3 years ago?
Yes.
Gotcha. Lena's here. Hi, Lena. All right, so those were my picks. Jonathan, I think, recounted his two switcheroo, left him with 23. So that brings us to Tony. Tony, where were you at?
I am at 21 this week. I had the Lorax at number one, John Carter at number two. And then I had Silent House at number three, Project X at number four, and Act of Valor at number five.
So when it was all said and done, this left me at number 12, puts poor Jonathan down to number 13, and of course Tony's still rocking a number 8 on the overall leaderboard with Tim, King of the Hill for this week. So plan for next week, get Tim.
Make Tim score 12.
So, you know, I went to go see John Carter Sunday night. Did either of you guys see it this week?
I have not had the opportunity.
Nope.
Okay. Well, I'll keep this simple. Saturday morning, I was recording with Aaron, and Aaron was like a woman who just found out he was pregnant. He was like glowing with how great John Carter was.
I listened to that episode, and he was ridiculous.
He was. So I went to go see it Sunday night with Uriah, and I gotta tell you, it was really good. Now, in my Twitter feed, I follow Ron Mars amongst some other people who have been going on and on about all these different stories about John Carter's a failure, John Carter's a success, it's a flop, it's great, and it just kind of drives me crazy because this is really how John Carter boils down. objectively, I would say it's a great, great movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Let me refer to that. Subjectively, I would say it's a great movie. People, mileage may vary, all standard boilerplate disclaimer there, but I thought it was a great movie. Financially, it's a movie with a $250 million production budget, which has been estimated with advertising and everything else to be up to $350 million. They only made $30 million domestically. They did have a very strong overseas showing, and they brought about $70 million overseas, so a total of around $100 million. But even with $100 million weekend box office, that's still financially a huge failure.
Yes. Yeah.
They would have to bring in, because we've mentioned before, but the studio see about half of the box office comes back to them. The other half of the ticket price goes to other various people whose hands are in the pie. So they'd have to make another $400 million in box office to break even.
Right, and you almost have to wonder how much of the $250 million production budget is, like we talked about before, that overhead production. That this movie's been in development for how long?
I don't know. I haven't seen anything about how long, but
it's been in development for a while.
Andrew Stanton was a big name that was involved in it, and I read an article over the weekend that was talking about how they compared John Carter to Ishtar. And they talked about how at the time of Ishtar, a couple months before it came out, the advertising firm for the movie studio that was putting out said, you guys shouldn't waste any more money on trying to promote this movie. It's going to do horribly. The studio did the exact opposite and just shoved more money at promoting it because Warren Beatty and Dustin Hoffman started, and they didn't want to jeopardize the relationship with Warren Beatty and Dustin Hoffman.
Sure.
Because they wanted to use them in other movies, and they're huge, huge names at the time, still are really. So they point out people like Andrew Stanton and a couple other players who were involved in this. They're like, their premise was that the studio's okay, Disney's okay, just losing this huge amount of money because it's going to keep those guys happy. And then they brought it to this was actually the part I really liked about the article. I don't agree with all of what they just put out there, but the best part is like, and the only good news for Disney is that last year at the same time they had Mars Needs Moms, which was also a huge financial failure. So their balance sheet's going to look about the same as last year. So but it's a good movie. I don't know why it's not doing so well. I mean, we could speculate about it, but honestly, it's a fun, fun movie. There are some tongue-in-cheek references. I don't want to ruin for anybody. But
you have to figure
it's a great time.
In the mainstream, John Carter is not a property.
In the mainstream, Avatar wasn't a property, and look how much of that made.
Avatar was not, but James Cameron was. And when you can say, by the man who made Titanic and Aliens and Terminator 2, that...
They did that same marketing strategy for that. What was it? The Deep, the one, the 3D people who are down scuba diving.
Nobody actually cares about a scuba diving documentary.
No, but his name was everywhere on that.
Yes,
yeah,
it was.
But here is the revitalization of 3D with the huge world and sci-fi and that's. And add in James Cameron's name. That's
and add in Christmas release.
3D scuba diving documentary. I'm already asleep.
Well, it wasn't quite a documentary. It was a thrilling tale. But
it
yeah,
was a docu something.
Docudrama maybe.
Yeah.
Docu thriller.
It wanted to be like they. Yeah. At least that's the impression I got from the trailers. Was James Cameron does.
They got trapped. They're scuba diving. They get trapped, and the tunnels are flooding. They're trying to get out. I mean, I didn't see it, but yeah. So moving on from stuff we haven't seen, have no idea about. I'd recommend John Carter to this demographic. Probably most people who listen to this podcast are probably more into science fiction and fantasy. And it's the CG is gorgeous. I mean, the animated effects, which probably took up a lot of that budget, are just drop dead fantastic.
I had to take Aaron's review with a bit of a grain of salt, especially after his gushing review of that. He goes on to talk about The Walking Dead and to talk about how wonderful a television show it is. Because he's wrong.
I haven't seen The Walking Dead.
I've watched every episode.
I mean, his theory, which I don't know if this all got in the episode, is that the first half of the second season was awful up until the mid-season finale. But then I guess there's been about two episodes since they came back with the second half of the second season.
Mm.
And he's been much more excited about the second half.
No, it's not.
Again, haven't watched it.
Yeah, they've made critical failure errors in just logic and in character development throughout. And this time when they're saying the show is so good, they have characters that go into town to rescue someone. And then, hey, those people have been gone too long. So me, a female, who in the episode following this has a speech about how we're the women and we should stay home and support the men who are going out and fighting. Swear to God, that happens. She goes and gets in a car and drives into town as it's getting dark. Then, when somebody realizes she is left, that person gets into a car and goes out looking for her. When one of their rules is nobody goes anywhere alone because it's dangerous to go alone. It's like, you people are breaking your own rules.
How long has the zombie apocalypse been going?
Months.
How do they have two working cars?
Oh, it would last months.
Yeah. They do explain that. There are actually reasonable explanations for some of that stuff.
They have gas?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, because there are vehicles abandoned everywhere. And they show them siphoning gas and stuff like that. So they go to gas stations.
A couple months isn't really enough time for it to start to break down and degrade. I mean, that takes years.
Yeah. They're actually, when they do survival stuff, it's mostly pretty good. It's actually pretty reasonable how they do the survival stuff.
But then they do random, let's create drama crap that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so they had one character walking. Now, we track this character as he walks in the middle of an open field in a straight line towards something laying in the field. He looks at the thing in the field, then turns around, and there is a zombie right behind him. How does this happen? This doesn't make any sense. And it's just, it's full of things like that. It's like, this zombie walks at plot distance speed, you know, through plot distance space to appear at plot distance appropriate time. I mean, it's rough. It is not as great as people. It's not the worst thing on television, but it is not nearly as great as the people who are so hyped about it say it is.
Yeah. I haven't really read the comic books. I haven't watched the show, so I can't really comment intelligently on it at all.
Yeah.
But I can say John Carter, it's a fun movie. Whether you see it in the theater or check it out on DVD later on, I would give it two thumbs up.
Yeah, I'll probably either wait till it goes to the cheap show just down the road, or pick it up from the Red Box when it comes out in a couple months.
I want you to watch it so we can talk about it. And really, okay. I'll be honest, it'd probably be able to see the cheap show because the effects and some of the airship battles, I think you'd probably will want to see on the big screen to really enjoy it.
Fair.
So, it is one of those movies where a lot of the effects are going to look a lot better on the big screen.
Nice.
You know what?
So anyway, go ahead.
You know what? I do actually have a backseat box office relevant movie to talk about.
Oh,
what?
Boy.
Yeah.
Who are you? What's to do with the real Jonathan?
Sat down last night with the wife and, yeah. You remember Johnny English Reborn?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, finally watched that.
What did you think?
Actually, I enjoyed it quite a lot. We all enjoyed it quite a lot. Probably not, well, I mean, definitely not Oscar-worthy, because it didn't show up at the Oscars. But it was entertaining. And it actually managed to succeed in, like, the first Johnny English was bumbling spy, and Johnny English now is still a bumbling spy, but like he does a lot of things. He's actually smarter in a lot of ways. And so
he's half competent now?
Yeah, he's halfway competent now. Like, still manages to screw everything up, but not in the ways you would expect him to. And so, like, the great, great chase scene. Like, they're in Hong Kong, and they're Johnny's contact was assassinated, and so he's chasing down one of the people related to the assassin. He's trying to get this key back from him, and the assassin is doing all this parkour stuff and jumping around on the roof and all that kind of thing. Things that you'd see in a Jackie Chan movie, you know, like climbing down the side of a building along the bamboo, you know, whatever those are called. And it's funny because, like, right at the start of the movie, the guy says, like, he's in a Asian monastery and training, and he's like, "You're old, but you're wiser now." So Johnny's like, dude does this parkour move over a fence, and Johnny just walks up and opens the gate.
Nice.
He, like, leaps over an air conditioning unit, and Johnny English just squeezes along the side. She's, like, walking along. Dude's climbing down the bamboo structure on the outside of the building, and Johnny English is like, "I'll get in the elevator and go down."
That's awesome.
It was pretty hilarious because he's just right behind him the entire time. Like, I haven't done anything. So that was pretty funny. Anyway.
Did you see any movies this last week, Tony?
Mostly just stuff in preparation for one podcast or another. Rewatched Kick-Ass, Relativity Picture, by the way.
In honor of, was that in honor of Sam's birthday?
Well, it wasn't necessarily in honor of Sam's birthday, but we
can
did
we
happen
lie
to
and say it was.
We could.
Okay.
But
so
we,
in honor of Sam's birthday, you watched Kick-Ass.
We watched Kick-Ass, and I did actually wish him a Kick-Ass birthday yesterday in social media.
In honor of Sam's birthday, you'd have to watch something like Northern Exposure.
Yeah. So watch that, and then I watched the movie for next week. We're doing I Love You, Philip Morris. And I watched that one, and I have to say, I didn't have any real expectations of what this movie was going to be. But the little bit of expectations I had about the movie were nothing that I got in watching this movie. And
every time I see the title for that movie, I think of, like, Thank You for Smoking.
Well, yeah, and I mentioned it to Julie that, you know, I watched it, and she's like, "Isn't that the one of?" No, it is not.
Nope, not at all.
It is not. Now, have you gentlemen seen this movie?
I read the back box cover.
Yeah.
I mean, I have an idea of the plot. I have not actually sat down and watched
it. Yeah, movie. So not a big spoiler, but Jim Carrey's character tells stories. He's not honest with himself and with anyone around him about who he is. I mean, it's clear to the audience what this person is and what he does, but the reveal... So he's telling you this story, and you introduce the fact that as a child he found out he was adopted. The first time we see him as an adult, he's playing piano for the church choir. He's got a wife and children, a child, and you see him. There's a scene where you see him obviously in a bedroom, and you see him kind of straight up and down, shirt off, sweat, just covered in sweat, and just banging away. Oh, yeah. Just going to town. Then they pan down just a little farther, and it's a dude. And he says, "Oh, did I forget to mention I'm gay?"
Nice.
Yeah, the reveal is awesome. And I'm not spoiling anything telling you, because now you're going to anticipate it, and when you see it, you're going to realize just how great it is. And that's just the beginning of the movie. And it just kind of goes from there. It's Jim Carrey is real hot and cold for me. Like, when he gets the real goofball stuff, I'm not as in, you know, at the time when Ace Ventura came out, I was of an age where it was like, oh, that's hilarious, you know. Now it's like, I can't really watch that movie anymore. It just doesn't hold up for me. But this movie is solid, and he is funny throughout. It's great. I recommend watching it. We're going to talk about it next week on Backseat Producers. So you got a little bit of time. Wednesday will be you can show up in the chat room and listen along as we talk about it. But
you know that kind of reveal on that movie reminds me a lot of a it started as a play, but it was adapted as a movie. It had Patrick Stewart in it, had the guy from Wings, and I am blanking on the name of it. As I talk, I'm scrolling through Patrick Stewart's IMDb, so I'll get there.
We talked about it.
Yeah, you guys did an episode about it, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, it was...
Jeffrey?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you, sir.
Yes, Jeffrey.
You know, I'm disappointed that you can't get a bust of Patrick Stewart's head.
That's not right.
That is disappointing.
It is.
He has the perfect male human head.
This and he's true. Got a British accent.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, I might be a little obsessed with that. Anyway.
So the guy from Wings, you know, plays the lead in that, and there's this part where he's going through his day, and it shows him, like, you know, cuts to a scene where he's, like, under the bed, and there's all this pony, you know, moaning and panting. And, you know, it, like, cuts away and shows, like, these, you know, generic two couples in the movie theater, right? And the guys are like, yeah! And then, you know, the sheet comes off, and it's two guys going at it. And it cuts back to them, and the guys are like, oh! And the dates are like, oh!
Yeah.
Just, that called back to that yep. for me. But, you know, I think the people at home might be asking themselves, why are these guys nattering on about everything except the movies that are coming out next week? And I'll tell you why.
One.
There's only one movie coming out next week, so we got to fill some time.
Yes, it is one movie, and there's... not a lot to describe because people of a certain age understand what's going on with 21 Jump Street.
This movie looks so ridiculous, it might be good.
You know, it might.
It could be awful. It might be actually kind of good.
You know, when 21 Jump Street came out, I was like, this show sounds completely dumb. I don't understand. This is ridiculous. None of those people look like teenagers. And just kind of avoided it. As the series went on, I would catch a couple episodes here and there. And then I started watching it when it was in syndication. It's like, the show's actually kind of good. It's not great. It's not even good. I don't think it could hold up today with the production values it had then. But at the time, it was pretty solid. And I think they're taking an interesting tactic in taking this movie and then turning it into a comedy.
Yes, they are not taking it seriously at all.
Which, the original series was not a comedy.
No, it, I mean, it had some funny bits, but right. It was not a comedy.
No, it was not a comedy by any stretch.
No. No, I remember watching, I'm sure it was in syndication at that point, but yeah, I remember watching it on Sunday afternoons with Fame, and no, it was not a comedy at all.
Right, right.
But this is going to show, but this version has Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum as two horrible, horribly misfit cops who basically screw up so badly, they're assigned to work undercover in this... They're reactivating this undercover high school task force to ferret out this new drug that's kind of swept through the school. It's got Ice Cube as their, I believe he's the lieutenant for the precinct that's running this. It's got Rob Riggle as the gym coach at the high school.
It also has what's his name? Ron Swanson from
Community? Parks and Rec.
From Parks and Rec. He's in there too.
I can't say I'm like chomping the bit, but the preview makes me laugh. I may go see this weekend.
I gotta tell you, you know what it kind of reminds me of in a way? Police Academy.
There's some of that going on, yeah.
Just in kind of that, you guys are screw ups and now we're gonna put you, you know, in this position where we think you'll do the least damage, even though we're putting you in a school with real children, so that doesn't really make sense. But but that's very Police Academy also.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, you know what? If they end up going to the Blue Oyster Bar, I will just be completely pleased with this movie and see it many times and probably own the DVD. If they literally call back to Police Academy in that way.
The part they run down this, you know, it's like they're basically graduating. The two of them are like, get ready for like a life of awesome. And then it cuts to the two of them on bikes in a park, patrolling the park. And I'm just like, oh, this could be good. Or when he tries to jump on the car, Jonah Hill attempts to slide across the roof of the car like Channing Tatum yes. does. And this isn't spoiling, because if you haven't seen this preview, you don't have a TV probably. You know, he just smashes into the windshield and bounces off. It's just laying there broken. Chain Tamer is like, are you okay? He's like, I think I pooped myself. It could be so bad it's good.
And, okay, so this has bugged me, and I don't think we've had the opportunity to talk about this because we were talking about other things in the last Channing Tatum movie. But am I the only one who doesn't feel a compulsion to call him Tatum Channing?
No, it's hard.
Because yeah, no, Tatum Channing either. Seems like a real... I mean, for two ridiculous words as names, Tatum Channing seems more real than Channing Tatum.
It's like
Tatum
a name.
Does. Yeah.
Channing's an odd... It's odd to have a first name that ends in an ing.
Yes.
I can't think. I mean, I'm sure there are.
The guy on Comic Book Men, Ming.
No, we're not counting anything off that show.
That show I'm shouldn't sorry. Count for anything. That show is terrible.
There's Ming, like 5 minutes.
Ming doesn't count anyway, because there's a difference between having something that's ing when it's only one syllable.
True.
And then having like a gerund where, how do you chan something? That's what I want to know. What is he chanting?
Hey, I could be Jackie
Channing Tatum.
I could be Jackie Channing. Come on.
Well, I don't know. I guess the question is, do we think that 21 Jump Street is going to bring in more than $30 million this weekend? Because that's really what it's... At best, that's probably what's going to need to take first place away from The Lorax. It probably literally only needs about $25 million to be first.
Yeah.
Probably 25.
Yeah, I think it has the potential of cracking 25, and I think that's really all it's going to need to beat The Lorax, because The Lorax is already at 38 this week.
Right. It's been out for about 3 weeks now, and I mean, it's made $121 million domestically in 2 weeks, so...
Right. Right.
Yeah. It's tapped its market pretty well.
I think
However,
so.
However, there aren't really any other kids' movies out.
Right, and considering the word of mouth about John Carter, which is kind of mixed, and people who still don't know it are still like, I don't know what this movie is, so why do I need to go see it?
Plus, it hasn't overcome its opening weekend problems, and so
no,
it's
it
facing
hasn't.
The same issues. There are people who love it. There are people who don't. There are people who have no idea. That's exactly what it opened to, so it's
correct.
Not really going to do anything different.
Plus, if you look at the dailies, it is still factoring in at about a third of what The Lorax is doing day over day, if not, you know, a little more than that. So...
I would really like to see John Carter just have a unbelievably good weekend this weekend, because I want another John Carter movie, because the first one was very good, and the way that's doing financially, there's really no way there's going to be another John Carter movie in any type of form you would recognize with this type of budget, with this type of effort put into it. Now,
I think that's going to depend on the DVD market.
I don't...
Something like this has a good chance. It seems like something that has this kind of word of mouth to it has a good chance of making a comeback on the secondary market.
They would have to sell a... I mean, I'm assuming their numbers... If they say John Carter takes a 50% drop worldwide this coming weekend and makes $50 million internationally and domestically combined, you know, that's going to bring them up to about $150 million total on a $250 million budget. They're going to still have to sell a lot of DVDs to make up for that shortfall at the box office.
I don't know.
Yeah, and I was just looking. It's pretty much opened in every market it's going to open in.
Yeah. It pretty much launched everywhere last weekend.
Right. The only exception to that I see on this list of foreign markets is that it opened in Indonesia yesterday.
I'll keep my fingers crossed that the Indonesian market comes out.
But I mean, I don't know how the international market may be bashing. I don't know how the international market factors into something like the HSX score, but you were always saying that the opening weekend tends to be about a third of what the movie does.
That was my estimate.
Yeah, so I mean, if it tends to be about a third of what the movie does, then that's looking at $300 million.
But that leaves the studio about $100 million in the hole, in the red for that.
But you also have to wonder how much did it really cost to make this movie, and how much of it was pre-production? Was this $150 million movie with $100 million spent over 15 years, as it went through script rewrites and character designs and things like that? Because if that's the case, then realistically, they're looking to make 150 back, and anything else is just paying off old debt.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of like
the CGI is going to be done. So a lot of that stuff, you know, some of the alien characters and that kind of thing are going to be able to be brought back in without having to spend a bunch of money on redesigning them.
Right.
So
that, you know, the articles I read implied, they didn't explicitly say, but implied, you know, most of the budget was spent recently, but you know, some of it may be old debt. I don't know. They didn't explicitly go into the details of what was from which, but I would love to see another John Carter movie of the same quality and caliber come out in the future, because the first one was just that good.
Now, I just wouldn't lose hope, because
I'm not going to lose sleep over it.
I'm just saying, industry writers are looking for flops and breakout successes, and if something doesn't, they'll try to fit stuff. It seems like, to me anyway, they'll try to fit things into that mold. Even if a movie doesn't do, you know, if it doesn't exceed expectations, then all of a sudden it's failed miserably. And there is no happy medium between there. And so I would say that's one of those things that until all the cards have been dealt and, you know, it actually leaves theaters, I wouldn't judge anything one way or the other.
I mean, that's a good point. There have been weeks in the past where I've you know, heard a news story on the radio or read something in the article about, you know, X movie, you know, had a great weekend and took number one at the box office. But then you look at the returns, and you know, it made like, you know, it was like the middle of winter. It was like, you know, February.
Yeah.
And it made $10 million on a $70 million budget, and you know, it just had no competition was why it was number one. Really, it was a horrible movie that did badly, but it's because it was number one, all the writers want to talk about how great it was and how good it did at the, you know, at the theaters, and you're like, it doesn't really fit with the numbers.
Yeah. So I don't know. I wouldn't give up hope on a sequel yet, is all I'm saying. Maybe when it leaves theaters and it's only done $150 million, then we can worry. But
maybe a better question is, should I fear about a sequel to my 25 score again next weekend?
I don't know.
That is a good question.
You're going to have to list off what you're picking.
You know, I think it could be interesting. I think we might have a lot of similar picks this week.
Well, because there's only one new movie coming out.
Yeah.
The question is, how much do you think it's going to take? Because, you know,
is it going to shift everything else down, or is it going to only come in second or third? I mean, that's,
I think the big questions are, where do you put Jump Street and
what's number five?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause Act of Valor and Silent House are 330,000 apart from each other. So yeah, I think that's right. I think it's, where are you going to put Jump Street number one or number two, and then what's going to be your number five?
I honestly don't think there's a whole lot of question about number five, but we'll get there.
You just hate Act of Valor.
Hey, you know what? I get to say that. I get to say that because I don't have to give my picks first.
All right. That's true. By the time it gets to you, you'll be like, oh, yeah, I had it written down for weeks.
That's right. That is correct.
I cast runes a month ago.
I might do that. Pick a week where like six movies are releasing and just be like, all right, check them now.
No, see, the new way of doing it is...
Here's my prognostication.
Is writing names on the wall and then opening a vein and looking for the blood splatter pattern, and that's how you do the picks.
Well, this is what I...
I'll just find myself a chicken.
We here at Backseat Box, so no way actually endorse any of these methods except for casting runes, of course. That we approve of. Everything else, take with a grain of salt. And don't do it at home.
Actually, the preferred method is tearing bits of piece of paper up and throwing them into the air.
That's acceptable.
No. It was they were business cards.
Oh, there you go. The story becomes clear a year later.
And I'm saying, before you start cutting on a chicken, think about the lashback from the pita crowd. Just consider that before you do anything drastic to a domestic.
Hey, that is a religious practice. Thank you very much. If it's good enough for J-Lo.
I didn't know you're voodooing.
No, it's not. I can't remember what voodooing. It is. I'm trying to remember what it is, but I know Jennifer Lopez practices it.
Is it Santeria?
Santeria. There you go.
That's a great Sublime song. Anyway, all right. I think 21 Jump Street can take number one. Boy, I hope this doesn't bite me in the ass later, but I'm going to put 21 Jump Street number one. I am not going to buck the trend. I'm worried that Carter's going to have a bad second week. I'll put The Lorax at number two, John Carter at number three. At number four, that leaves me with Project X. Number five, I don't think I can bet against the real Navy SEALs. I'm going to put Active Valor at number five.
Ooh, Navy SEALs.
Navy SEALs.
Yeah, and thank you for sending me that clip, Tony. I appreciate that.
You are very welcome. I don't know if you noticed.
Clip, we just watched Clerks last night.
I don't know if you guys noticed, but last week on the main show for the show notes, when it came to putting... Active Valor in there. I put Active Valor featuring Real, and then I put the Navy SEALs link. The one that I sent you, I put that right in the show notes. Jonathan, what are your picks? Because I still get to go last.
Yeah, you do still get to go last because you lost.
Aren't you special?
Yeah. Well, and perhaps it won't come in first, but I doubt it's going to come in worse than second. And so even if we put it in first, it's not going to cost us more than 3 points. So I am going to put 21 Jump Street at number one as well. I'm also going to follow trends and put The Lorax, John Carter, and Project X in the next three spaces. I think, though, $10,000. I mean, $10,000 estimated dollars, really?
Are you gonna bet against really? Act Fowler and it's gonna burn you for a second throw? Really? Are you gonna do that?
Probably.
Do it.
Thing is, this week it's only gonna burn me for 1 point when I put Silent House at number five instead.
That's probably true.
So, what else is it gonna? You really think 1,000 words is gonna be?
Probably not.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So I said you're probably right. I didn't say you were wrong. I said you're probably right.
I think I'm definitely right. So it's only going to cost me 1 point.
So do we officially have a pick then for you for your fifth place slot?
Silent House.
Mm.
There it is. It's locked in. So Jonathan and I are the same except for our number five picks. I took Active Valor. He took Silent House. Tony, what you going to do, buddy?
Well, I am definitely going to be dittoing someone.
Ooh, so the question is, who's Tony gonna ditto this?
That is the question.
And Lena's in the chat room, so I'm curious also who she may or may not ditto this week, as I usually am.
I've had these picks written down since about 9 o'clock, and I have not changed them.
3 weeks ago.
Yeah, 3 weeks ago. yeah. So, no surprise, my top four are the same as you guys.
Shocking.
Yeah, it's shocking. That's a huge surprise, I know.
Real Navy SEALs, Tony. Real Navy SEALs.
I have a real problem with Silent House and thinking that it's going to maintain any kind of box office. I'm going to go with Act of Valor.
Yes, you are. Yeah.
I understand the feeling. I just have that same problem with Act of Valor.
So. Yeah, it's. I mean, the alternate side of the question is can Act of Valor still hold an audience? You know, this many weeks in, we are getting farther down the rabbit hole for Act of Valor at this point. It's losing theaters.
I can't tell you how many times I watched Navy SEALs in the theater when it came out. I'm just saying, I went a lot.
And then you got mocked by Kevin Smith.
Not in person. That would have been kind of cool.
No, in person.
Really, I wish. So, I wish I could say I met him.
So Silent House is not changing the number of theaters it's in, but Act of Valor is. It's actually losing theaters.
It lost 100 last weekend. What did they have down for it to lose this week?
186. It's losing. Still leaves it. Yeah, it's losing 6%, which
that still leaves it in more theaters.
It's a rounding error. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's still in about 650 more theaters than Silent House. Interestingly, John Carter is not losing any theaters. That's honestly, you know, a little bit surprising to me.
That's not unusual. I don't know. I have a hunch because, you know, I did that column for a couple of years.
True.
The first 2 weeks, you never see really a brand new big wide debut lose screens. I don't know if they have a 2 week minimum contract with theaters.
That could
I don't
be.
Know if something like that goes on. I've seen them add theaters the second week out, but I've never actually seen them go down theaters the second week out.
Yeah, the only thing that could be interesting is this movie, Friends with Kids. It's actually adding theaters. And I've seen like commercials for it, and it looks like it could be good. Now, granted, it's still only in 600 theaters, but if it continues to trend well and continues to add theaters, this could be something that could sneak up on us in a week or two.
Could. I mean, there's a very low bar to break in the top five this coming weekend.
Low bar. Yeah, low. Like 4 million.
4 million. Yeah, 4 million to get in, probably.
So, yeah. Oh,
you know, Tim in the chat room is making it a threesome, Tony. He's diddoing us.
Look out.
And Elena seems to be implying that she's going to ditto Jonathan this week, but she hasn't really put it in terms I feel comfortable saying she is for sure.
I know I haven't dittoed Jonathan yet, and I feel horrible about that I haven't.
It's good that she's got a big heart. I mean,
that's right.
Yeah, she cares about Jonathan's feelings. That's what makes her special.
That's somebody. Who does?
I mean, we don't.
No.
So
no.
It's good that she does.
It's good that somebody does.
Oh, no. S is making it a foursome.
And there it is.
Jonathan, how's that make you feel, buddy?
I'm fine.
He's going to... He's going alone on an island.
Nice, Tim.
Yeah, he could be the one laughing at the end of this, so...
It could be, because it could go... I mean, like we said, only 300,000 apart, it could go either way.
Or I could be the one that ruins a golden...
Quinta.
So, looking at this... looking at this, though... 1,000 words... You never know.
I think we do know.
I think,
you think?
It's safe to say we know.
It's in 1,800 theaters. I don't think so. It's close, but it's not adding theaters this weekend. I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I was just checking out. Friends with Kids ended up 13th this past week in only 369 theaters.
I mean, we don't give... I know
it
that
could
we don't
easily,
typically give...
That movie could easily break into the top 10 this week. Yeah. Easily.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, top 10, sure.
As for 1,000 words, I know we don't give Rotten Tomatoes much credit, but at this point, it's still... 1,000 words is still rocking a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, wow. I didn't notice that.
Still rocking that. Act of Valor has a 29. Silent House has
to be
a
fair, it only has 44 reviews though. Also, nobody is seeing this movie.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
Yeah, it says the box office based on who's seen the movie. Not good.
So, yeah. Of the audience, only 60% liked it.
And hey, look at 21 Jump Street. 86%. With 110 reviews. And the movie's not even out yet.
Tim's reply to that, Tony, was, ugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's safe to say from Tim's chat room comments, he in no way supports this movie. In fact, he would probably take a moral stand against it.
I will agree with most of the critics, though. I mean, there is something wrong with trying to muzzle Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
The whole point of Eddie Murphy is he talks fast.
Letting him run his mouth. Yeah, let him run his mouth.
Remove him for 2 hours from being able to do the thing that he does best.
Yep.
I mean, he was... Granted, the last couple Shrek movies have been terrible. But in the first Shrek movie, as Donkey, he was awesome. Mm-hmm. Just running his mouth incessantly. That is Eddie Murphy at his finest, when you just can't shut him up.
I agree. All right. Well, unless...
Tim is right. Tony does know jackasses. I've worked with enough of them.
I think we've about tapped it out for this week. I think...
I think so.
I think we should regroup next week and see who's laughing, who's crying.
It's either going to be Jonathan or the rest of us.
I'm going to predict this. I'm going to predict that... The average score is going to be very high this week. Only one new movie. You can quibble about which one's going to... I have a feeling that everyone's going to do well.
That's a dangerous prediction.
I've got some wood here that I'm going to be knocking constantly for a little while.
Way to throw yourself out on a ledge there. I hope you have enough room. Your dining set.
I was gifted with prophecy as a child. And
Tim is predicting
it now.
Tim is predicting Nazguls in the Shire.
The Black Riders are aloof.
Have you seen the image that it's Boromir, and it says, "One does not simply finish Skyrim."
I think we've talked about it before about the Google Maps.
When you try to
go from the Shire to
Mordor,
Mount Doom. Mordor. Yeah, that's right, Mordor. And
but
it kicks back an error message that says, "One does not simply walk into Mordor."
It only works if you do the walking directions. You can't do the driving directions. You have to do the walking directions.
Oh, yeah, because you can drive into Mordor.
Oh, yeah. But,
yeah, you don't just simply walk.
Yeah, one does not simply walk into Mordor. Yet they still give directions.
All right, guys. It's been a pleasure talking to you this week.
Yes, again, as always.
So for our listeners, in case you're worried about next week, don't worry. We will have our Axis and Allies recap because only one new movie opening next weekend as well.
Oh, there you go. And don't forget, at Julie Mast Saturday.
Saturday.
Wish her a happy birthday. Thanks, guys. See ya.
Bye.
See ya.